CG, what are we doing?
We are recording an ad for Nerd Critics Premium Membership.
What's that?
You know what it is. You know what we're doing. You're going to make me say it?
Well, I don't know what you said. I know what Nerd Critic is. I know what Himalaya is. What are you?
We are recording an ad for Nerd Critic to the Max.
That's right. That's what this is.
So if you go to Himalaya.com/Nerd Critic, you'll see a button that talks about becoming a premium member. It says nothing about to the Max, but that's fine. It is a premium membership for Nerd Critic. You get like four things.
I think it might be five, but five? We'll see.
All right. You get the episodes 2 days early. You get bonus episodes. You get to be a part of our live shows, various live shows that we do, and a bunch of giveaways. And that's the four I know of. Is there a fifth?
Well, the fifth thing technically actually is that you never have to listen to these kinds of ads.
Oh yeah. They're all ad free. That's right.
Ad free episodes, yeah. Including the bonus episodes, which sometimes have nothing to do with movies.
A lot of the times have nothing.
Usually have nothing to do with movies.
There's stuff like, Jordan's love for Legos.
That's right.
There's stuff like Jordan's hate for bicycle helmets.
Oh man.
And everything in between.
I don't know if this is a good pitch. Let's walk that back real quick. How much does it cost?
In my opinion, it costs a couple of dollars. No. A few. I don't remember which one. I forgot what stance I took, but it's $2.99.
It's $2.99. And there have been some arguments about whether $2.99 constitutes a couple or a few. I guess it's a fupple.
It's a fupple of dollars. For just a fupple of dollars each month, you're going to be a part of Nerd Critic to the Max.
And think about it this way. Do you really want a fupple of dollars?
Are you going to miss a fupple of dollars? That's the question.
Do you want to hold on to, in your hands, a fupple of dollars? I think you want to get rid of that.
Yeah.
I think you need to get rid of that.
That doesn't sound great.
I don't want to hold on to a fupple of dollars.
I don't want a fupple of anything, to be honest.
All right. Well, do you think we were really convincing?
Not at all.
Oh.
But, you know, that's kind of what we do. We're there, and hopefully people enjoy it. So listen, if you want to enjoy a little bit more, go check out Himalaya.com/nerdcritic.
Well, I don't love the
lack of confidence.
I don't love the lack of confidence, but...
Listen, we said for a fupple of dollars.
All right, just cut. It's fine.
I don't want to say it. I listen back to some of our episodes, and I say we're recording at the beginning of every single one.
That's my fault. I'm sorry.
It's cool.
So I leave it in like every single episode.
It's fine. I mean, you can leave it in. I'm just trying to try and figure out a different way to open the episode. Say something different. It's fine.
Well,
hey, guess what? We're recording.
Oh. It's good. It was a little uncertain. I saw that a little red light, but I'm not an expert here, so.
Welcome to Nerd Critic, a deep dive into big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. I am CJ.
And I am Jordan. CJ here is our resident nerd.
And Jordan is our studied and credentialed critic.
That's right. CJ, what are you wearing today?
I'm wearing a Batman shirt.
I see that.
Yeah.
I see that.
Superman belt.
Batman shirt, Superman belt.
That's about it.
CJ, what am I wearing today?
You are wearing a...
Just say it. Just say pajamas.
It's pajamas.
I'm wearing pajamas.
It's one of those like hoodies that's kind of also a t-shirt. You know what I mean?
Long sleeve shirt, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a long sleeve shirt with a hood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And pajama pants.
Because
where are we right now?
We're at your house.
Because why?
Because this is a different recording situation.
Because we've been sick. Both of us have been sick.
We have been.
It's
can you hear it in me? I can hear it in you
a little bit. I can hear it in you.
Can you?
I wonder if our listeners can hear.
I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll maybe never find out.
Yeah.
please, write in and tell us whether or not you noticed that we're sick. I'm getting over it. I don't think it was as severe for me as it was for you.
Yeah, it knocked me out for a couple days.
That's terrible, man. I'm sorry. I stayed home all day today and played video games and watched TV and read books and slept a little bit.
Nice.
And now we're recording a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I took 2 days off of work. It worked out, though, because it's like rare that you get sick and it's like convenient. Because my wife's out of town. She's working New York Comic Con. Everybody at work is focused on New York Comic Con, and I just kind of did my job from a distance and stayed home and had a chill weekend, so it worked out. And I got to rest a lot, which was great.
That's good.
So here we are.
Exactly what you need.
And now we're recording a podcast.
And now we're recording a podcast about Abominable.
Abominable.
That is today's subject. That is the movie that we watched.
Indeed.
And that is the movie we'll be talking about.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, okay. So, CJ, I'm hesitating here. I kind of want you to tell the story of our first conversation about this movie.
Okay. So this is what happens.
I'm hoping I won't regret it.
I'm just going about my evening. Just being totally all innocent.
Innocently going back.
And I get a phone call, and I see that it's Jordan. And I answer the phone call, and I'm like, hey.
Unsuspectingly.
So friendly. And Jordan goes, we have a problem. And I go, uh-oh, what's the problem? And he said, when we record, we're supposed to be recording on the movie 21 Bridges. But it got pushed back yet again. So we have a hole in our recording schedule of what are we going to talk about. So we talk back and forth for a couple minutes. And then Jordan goes, well, there is a movie coming out this weekend, but I refuse to talk about it. And I was like, wait a second. What movie is it? He goes, it's Abominable. And I'm like, wait a second. What? And we had a good, like, 10, 15 minute, I don't want to say argument, but it was like one of those things.
It was impassioned, whatever it was.
Yeah. about if we should cover Abominable. I'm like, listen, it's DreamWorks. They've given us Kung Fu Panda. They've given us How to Train Your Dragon. Why are we so quick to dismiss them? You say it's an unreliable studio. It's going to be bad. The trailer is bad. I don't want to talk about it. It's going to be bad. And I'm like, listen, man, I don't believe you. I don't think it's going to be bad. And you finally gave in because there was literally nothing else to talk about. You were up against a rock and a hard place, and you said, fine, let's talk about it. And then, can you tell them the text I sent you? I go watch Abominable with my wife, and as I'm exiting the theater, I text Jordan.
I'm just going to look it up and read it. I'm just going to read it. It's going to sound strong.
It doesn't bring me... It's going to sound strong.
It's going to sound a little strong.
It doesn't bring me a lot of pride to say that I may or may not have been wrong in this particular circumstance, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are.
Can you not find it?
I can't find it. Oh, no. Here it is. This is on the day of my anniversary, too. With my wife. My wife and I's anniversary. Our 6-year anniversary.
Was I on my way to your house when I texted you?
No,
this?
You were on the way back. You were on the way back from the movie.
Oh yeah, because I saw the movie after.
You had babysat.
Yeah, yeah.
That night.
I babysat and then we went straight to the movie.
Abominable. Yeah. All right, so here it is. It says, don't go see that movie, ... We can't cover it. We need to figure something else out. So bad. That's what you said.
And then you responded.
I said,
too late.
I said, too late, man. and then you texted one more time. It's so bad. Which I think that if you could have made the text smaller, if iMessages...
I would have whispered it.
Allowed that, like... font change, you would have done it.
It's, yeah, I was so baffled in the theater.
For the record, this is how powerful expectations are. So I was expecting exactly your experience, and I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I thought there were so many problems, but like I didn't walk away thinking what a terrible movie, because my expectations were. Seismically deep like underground, like you would have had to.
Well, and I think part of it too was that I was sitting there hoping so bad.
You wanted me to be wrong.
I wanted you to be wrong so bad.
I didn't want you to be wrong. Who's the bigger person? We should run a poll. Who's the bigger person here? Jordan, who hopes that he is wrong and that CJ is right and that the movie is good. Well, actually, honestly, I think it just proves that both of us don't like watching bad movies. And so when we go to see movies, we want them to be good.
Yeah, we always
go generously. Mm-hmm. I always go generously. I always want a movie to be good. I just, you know, I mean, depending on the circumstances, my expectations may not match my hopes and my fears, my desires.
So to give some spoiler-free review, after some time and stepping away from the conversation that we had, it's a beautiful movie that, I mean, I was in the theater with a bunch of kids. The kids were giggling. They enjoyed it. And I think that it is, it's the lesser of a fun kids movie, where we've come to expect fun kids movies through studios like Pixar, that it's a fun kids movie, but the adults also love it.
Yeah.
Right?
Pixar, sometimes DreamWorks, sometimes Disney.
Yeah.
Sometimes Illumination. Well, no, never Illumination, but, sometimes.
Maybe sometimes.
Some parts of some movies. From
Yeah. So, but it's kind of the old expectation of animated movies, where it is very, it's not extremely intelligent. And it's just an adventure, animated adventure movie for kids, straight up, that's it.
And it is very beautiful.
It is very beautiful.
Very, very, very beautiful, and it has lovely music, a couple of particular scenes and sequences with lovely use of music. It was deeply gratifying, I thought. Even sort of separate from the story itself, which was broken in a lot of ways, you know, given all the story problems, like, you still arrive at a few of these scenes that were executed so profoundly well, in terms of just artistically and musically, that it ended up being moving anyway.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great, and pretty impressive. I think it's fair that we can go into some spoilers, but first I want to say, you know, if you're you know, considering whether or not to see this movie, and you're not that interested in animated movies, maybe don't bother with this one.
Yeah.
If you really love animated movies and you're really into the art of animation and illustration, I think it's totally worth seeing.
Yes.
My
wife, the artist, absolutely loved watching this movie because it was so beautiful.
And I think even given that, we're gonna give a spoiler warning here, but I don't think that you should stop listening, even if you're in either camp, unless you hate spoilers so much that you just, like, you know,
you should be all right.
I think even if you plan on going to see this movie and you haven't yet, like, I don't think us spoiling the plot is going to spoil the experience of the movie. That's what I think.
Agreed.
So there's the preface. Yeah. So now we can feel free to spoil this movie.
Well, we're supposed to go into spoilers and nerd out, right?
Yeah.
And really the only thing that I could nerd out about are, one, the animation, which we've already talked about, but it really is quite gorgeous.
Yeah.
There's one scene in particular where they are riding cloudfish.
Yes.
That's just bonkers.
You're talking about the cloud koi.
The cloud koi.
And I want to talk about riding the little rowboat on waves of grain, or like waves of fields, like, of flowers.
Yellow flowers.
Where they're like surfing down
Earth
that is literally moving in giant, like, tidal waves. It is so stunning.
It is so stunning. Striking.
And I have my complaints about both of those scenes, but they don't have anything to do with the way that those scenes were executed.
Animated,
jaw-dropping is a good word for it.
Absolutely. I also, I think I had potentially a better time with some of the characters than you did.
Potentially.
Like the little chubby kid who loves basketball.
Well, he was cute.
He was amazing.
He was cute.
I loved him.
Yeah, no,
I was a chubby kid who loved basketball. people would play with me, though. That's one difference.
he was cute. I liked the character design fairly well. I didn't love the design of Everest, the Abominable, the Yeti, whatever, himself. My wife actually has a really great complaint against a lot of animated movies that their creatures, in order to be quote unquote cute or lovable, they have to have just enormous, like, just dinner plate size eyes, just the biggest, like, bigger than your head eyes. And she's just like, it makes them look like toddler toys. Like they just don't look, they don't look like any real kind of thing.
I wonder if they're going for toddler toys so they sell them.
They've got to be. They've got to be. But it's frustrating because once again, it sort of dumbs it down for the audience. Like already we're missing some critical sort of points of maturity. And here, even in the character design, sure, he's cute, but like, is that the best you can do? Like to make a cute creature? Like, isn't, I mean, this is the abominable snowman. Like, even though he's a baby abominable snowman, we don't know that at first. And like his, you know, I mean, it's supposed to be one of the most fearsome mythic creatures in the world. Like, could you not like at least
fearsome up a little bit?
Yeah. Attempt to make us believe that like someone seeing him for the first time would be nervous. If I saw him for the first time, I'd be like, oh, why? You need a hug.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he's also very fluffy. So what about Toothless?
So Toothless is, I may get some flack for this, but I feel the same way about Toothless.
His eyes are too big?
I don't hate his character design, but I also don't love it. We spend a lot of the first act of that movie being told that he is the fiercest and most terrifying of all of the dragons. And when we meet him, we're like, you are cuddly. You are downright cuddly.
Yeah.
Like his teeth are blunted. Like there's nothing scary about him.
Yeah.
Like if he bit down on my arm, I'd be like, that's kid tickles. Cute. It's cute. It's cute. I just like, you know.
It's funny. Yeah, you'll get flack for that for sure.
Well, but from where? Because like he's not a fearsome creature. Like what are you gonna argue against? He's not fearsome. Like
he can shoot you with a fire thing, blue fire ray.
It's cool.
Thing. It's cool. He could shoot you with it.
Okay. He's just not a scary creature.
Yeah,
is it totally necessary to make your animal creatures so, so cute? I don't know. I don't think it is. I think that it's
all about that
it's
merch,
I think it's all about the merch. I think that there's clear evidence of, a make it for the toys kind of thing, and also an assumption about children that they can't handle creature design that isn't like excessively cuddly.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfair. I think it's unfair to kids. I mean, I like Neverending Story was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid, and very few of the creatures in that movie are cuddly.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the dragon dog, who is also terrifying.
Yeah.
And there's lots of just monsters and creatures.
You know what animation studio does that well? That uses story instead of design. Laika Studios.
That's a great. That's like a great
like Box Trolls.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Laika Studios, who's now I believe out of business. So.
Wah.
So maybe thank DreamWorks you, is Link. Right. Missing Link, which by the way, Missing Link, Smallfoot, Abominable.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Yeah.
I want it to stop.
A zeitgeist.
Sure.
At least a perceived one. Do you have things to nerd out about with this movie?
I feel like I have nerded out about the things that I wanted
to
nerd out
about. There weren't really any spoilerful nerd out moments.
There's a moment when she plays the violin on the, like, next, was it a waterfall? On this, like, mountain?
Yeah, it was like a Buddha statue, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you get the magic going on, and all the flowers are blooming. It is so beautiful that it literally will draw a tear, even though it is contextually, like, isolated.
Yeah.
So even though the narrative doesn't...
You can almost watch that as a short and feel something.
You could watch, just that scene and be like, oh...
Yeah.
Lovely.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
But
he just put his hand on his chest, guys.
Yeah. but yeah, so that stuff I really liked. I liked that the main big bad, the old dude who I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's like an explorer that struck it rich or a rich dude who liked to explore or I don't know what his.
I got the impression it was explorer that struck it rich.
Yeah, that's the impression I got. But once again,
I don't know.
Very bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyway, his character was sort of super inconsistent and flawed, but I liked the idea of him. I liked that he was supposed to be the sort of like menacing, overarching villain and then sort of softened up by the end. And then this is not something we've never seen before, but it's a nice turn.
It is a nice turn
to make your glasses pushing science chick to be the main villain. Yeah. I like that. And then you're, you know, it's a neat trick. I liked it. So there you go.
The idea was good. The execution maybe not so much.
Sure, sure.
All right. So I want to go into some critical thoughts.
Okay.
Well, so
think at me, CJ.
On this podcast, we have talked about fridge logic before.
Fridge logic.
Where and I did look it up because yeah, it is an actual thing. I thought you it was just something that you came up with.
No, I'm not.
It's an
smart.
Actual thing. So fridge logic is like refrigerator logic. If you haven't heard the other episodes that we've talked about, it is when you like watch a movie and you walk away happy, and then when you are bored thinking about the movie and at the fridge looking for something to eat, the illogical parts of the movie come to mind, but at that point they don't matter because your experience with the movie was full. And so a lot of movies with fridge logic you can forgive because you're not thinking about it in the moment. This movie is not that. I was having a hard time because I began not to care while watching this movie because I tried to write these things off as fridge logic, but they were popping up to me.
You hadn't gone to the fridge.
I hadn't gone to the fridge yet, and they were bothering me.
Yeah.
For example, little things. And this it's going to sound nitpicky, but when you have a bunch of these stacking on top of each other, it becomes a problem. One, maybe because I don't live in China, but who is advertising Visit Everest? It's not a good vacation spot. I don't understand. Why not make it just a motivational billboard?
Yeah.
And it's a picture of Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Visit Everest? Who's going to go to Mount Everest on a vacation anyway?
Rich people.
Sure.
That's a real problem, actually.
There's
like a John Oliver episode about it.
Really?
Yeah, like too many people climbing Everest. Like people are dying
because
it's so popular. But it's like a rich person feather in your cap. Like, ooh, I climbed Everest. And what it is you spending like $20,000 on like a Sherpa to like essentially carry you to the top.
Wow.
It's terrible.
Wow.
It's so bad.
Yeah,
but,
it's so bad.
But to your point, I don't think that there are billboards for it.
Yeah. Like it's one of those things that
is
weird.
Everest a corporation that buys billboards?
It's like the HOA of Everest.
That buys ad space.
Yeah. They went to every place on the postcards.
Mm-hmm.
Like the time of travel just didn't exist.
No, yeah.
It was non-existent. And it was like, it happens once and you're like, okay, I can forgive that. Then it happens again, and you're like, okay, all right. And then it happens again, and you're like, okay.
The only I will say this isn't a put. You're absolutely right. The only thing I will say in response to that is that the only really laugh out loud moment for me in the movie was when Jin uses his phone light to yell his way through the wilderness. And it shows his path on the map as being this squiggly line.
Yeah.
And I think that in that moment, the movie is kind of like winking at you to say, yeah, like we know.
We
like,
get it.
There's. Unfortunately, winking at a problem doesn't necessarily make it go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that like the whole kind of like the central conflict, if you can call it that, of the story is that they need to get to a place. Probably what you shouldn't do is telescope the distance between the places they need to get as though they don't matter.
Yeah.
So, because then you've essentially lost your central conflict.
It doesn't matter at that point.
Yep.
And there was another thing like the, what's his name? The preppy kid.
Jin.
Mm-hmm. Where Jin's like, oh no, I have no bars. And then they go to sleep and they wake up and he's suddenly on board and he's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
I looked it up. There's a boat out here every hour.
Yep.
Tiny little things that it's like, wait, how did you? And then you're like, okay, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Next scene.
Yeah.
Well, wait, how did that? No. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And it just happens so many times.
I was checked out. That's happening to sort of use your criticism as a bridge into my primary criticism is that there were no real problems and problem solving moments in this movie. I'll start with the first time that this happened and kind of made me guffaw a little bit was when Yi is running through the city for the first time with Everest,
as they name
the Abominable. And there's this whole chase sequence, and it's fairly paint-by-numbers chase sequence, and that's fine, and you're forgiving, and it's fine. And then they get to this point where they're on the top of a building, and there's a helicopter with a spotlight on them, and Jin literally says... I don't know how she's going to get out of this one. And then they look at each other and they say, wait, what time is it? Light show time. And then there's a citywide light show, which I don't know. This is embarrassing. Are they in Beijing or are they in Hong Kong?
No idea.
I think they're in Hong Kong. But anyway, there may very well be an 8 p.m. light show every night in that city. And that's fine. But guess what? In that moment, it is a cheat. And so the light show goes off, and then ta-da, they're free, and they get to where they need to go, because that just happened. It just happened. And conveniently.
We had not been introduced. Of
convenient plot turns.
Yeah, we had not been introduced to it at all.
No, it wasn't set up at all. Even if it had been set up, it wouldn't be good enough to get them out of that moment.
It's a little too miraculous. There was a lot of those. Like, just the whole...
That happened over and over again. And it happened the most often as they got to... Oh, and it's funny, because right after that scene, I remember, like, thinking... So they're jumping onto a barge as it's, like, you know, as it's, like, drifting away. And I'm like, here's a great opportunity for someone to jump and miss and fall in the water. And then they have to, like, get them out somehow. And it's, like, a little scary and, like, exciting. But no, they all make it, even though... So we get this, like, big moment of decision where Yi is like, no, I'm going after him. And she runs and she jumps and she barely makes it. And then, like, several minutes later, like, Peng wanders up and he's like, I want to come too. And then he, like, jumps and makes it just fine.
Yeah, this
and
chubby then, like, little kid.
Yeah, and then Jin is, like, complaining and yelling at them and wasting more time. And presumably the boat is still moving.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, I guess I'll come. And he jumps and makes it. And the big joke is that his shoes get dirty. And I'm like, that's not conflict. That's nothing. Yeah. That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's easy character like tropes. So, so then after that, like every moment that they need a solve, pretty much after that moment, other than, I mean, so the big conflict moments were like, oh, they're backed into a corner. They're about to be caught by the bad guys. Everest, you know, magics their way out of it.
Literally
magics their, I mean, it is no, there's like, also like, why do the blueberries get so big? There's just so many things.
Yeah.
Like actually that I'm willing to forgive if I had known earlier that Everest was a baby Abominable snowman, then I'd be like, oh, I get it. He's learning how to use his powers and
doesn't know how to stop it.
Sure. It's like a baby snake that like kills you because it's releasing too much venom. I get it. It's great. So releasing too much magic, making the blueberries catastrophically big. Got it. But because there's no setup for that, like I'm just sitting there trying to scratching my head thinking like,
why did that happen?
Yeah. Why does he seem so dumb? And then shortly thereafter, she's like, oh, I get it. He's a kid. Like, okay, great. So anyway, but every scene, like, that they get cornered, they magic their way out of it. Every time. And there's no rules around the magic. It's just that he starts singing and stuff happens and it happens to be really convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason that this is a problem is that we're following this character of Yi and we're supposed to be attached to her and she's supposed to learn something along the way. The problem is we don't know what she's learning because she never makes a decision. Outside of jumping on the boat, things just happen to her.
Yeah.
And so we never get to see any growth because we don't know what decision she would make.
Yeah.
It just kind of happens. Also, what did she learn? I know that she was distant from her family, which we can talk about. We can talk about if her at the beginning was actually a problem or if she was just a hardworking teenager. But she was distant from her family. And for some reason that was an issue, the way that she was being distant because her dad had passed away. And then she goes on this journey and learns to not be distant anymore. And I see C, but what was the B thing that happened?
Yeah.
That we were supposed to learn and be like, oh my gosh, that's how she learned that lesson. It just didn't seem to exist, which is the biggest issue I had with it.
Yeah.
Because even Jin, he learned something as well, but he was the side character, so like I can trust that he learned it at some point. But like where I'm supposed to attach myself to the narrative is Yi, and I have no idea what happened.
I'm trying to think of a moment in that movie where something bad happens to Yi, and I don't think anything bad ever happens to her or to Peng or to Ji. Anything real, anyway, or to Jin. Nothing really bad happens to any of them, and especially to Yi, because like you said, she's sort of passively following along.
It just happens to her.
And everything happens to her. There's never any real challenge, and if there is, then the Yeti magics them out of it.
Yeah.
So it's she is never given an opportunity to show us who she is by making decisions and overcoming challenges, which is the only way you can reveal your character.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can do it. You have to show them making decisions, and the best decisions to show your characters making are the decisions that that they use to solve bad problems. And the harder the problem and the more important the decisions, the stronger the character building is going to be. I'm going to say something really pretentious. Are you prepared?
I'm always prepared to hear something pretentious from you, Jordan.
I'm going to take that as a compliment. I'm going to unironically take that as a compliment.
You are the critic.
Now it doesn't feel like a compliment. No. here's the thing I want to say.
I'm sorry. That felt mean. I didn't mean for it to come across as mean as it came across.
It's okay. No, I'm mean to you all the time. It's totally fair. Be mean whenever you feel like it. Here's the pretentious thing I want to say. Conflict is the soil in which characters grow. It's true.
It is true. You're right.
And when you don't have enough conflict, your characters can't grow.
I feel like that should be, you should make a poster and in the background have it be a picture of Mount Everest.
Yeah.
And then write that on it. And you could sell that.
That or Mel Gibson being tortured in
in Braveheart. In Braveheart, yeah.
You win on a lot of fronts there. It's Mel Gibson at his prime.
Yeah.
It's a movie everyone loves.
Yeah.
And also no one's going to mind watching Mel Gibson get tortured because nobody likes Mel Gibson anymore.
It's true. I mean, that's you got a product idea right there.
Yeah. We should make it a nerd poster. I think it's coming. I think it's probably going to be in the store.
I think we can do it.
Yeah, I think we can.
I think we can.
Yeah.
All right. Keep an eye out.
Conflict is the soil in which characters grow. Here's Mel Gibson being tortured. So that's the thing that's the main thing that was missing from this movie. And you know, there could have been, here's the thing. There could have been a lot of problems. You could have left a lot of the problems unfixed in this movie, and if they had done that right, it would still be really fun and satisfying.
Mm.
And it still would have worked mostly.
Yeah.
And we would nitpick at that point. We would nitpick about how her character wasn't set up very well. How, you know, her sort of unhealthy busyness just seemed like hustling for something she really wanted and seemed really properly motivated to get.
Yeah.
So it was, we could nitpick about that. But then if there were a lot of really satisfying adventure scenes where we saw characters working together to solve problems and fix things and get to where they wanted to go, then we would say, man, I really like that movie. Here's a couple ways it could have been better.
Yeah.
Instead, we said, I didn't care about anything that happened in that movie.
I really didn't.
And also, there was no setup, and also there were no real payoffs.
Yeah.
So, this is the main problem that I have, and I want to talk about animation a little bit, because I have some friends at DreamWorks, and I've asked them about DreamWorks movies, because sometimes, like we talked about, sometimes there are really good movies that come out that do the things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Where you have really satisfying conflict resolution, you have really satisfying adventures where characters have to fix stuff, where bad things happen to main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe the worst things. Like, the best way to tell a story is to have the worst possible thing happen to your character and then show how they deal with it. That's it. That's how you, that's storytelling in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So, and there are some DreamWorks movies that have done that. Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon. I would, you know, I would even argue that, that for all their flaws, the other movies in those franchises also do that thing fairly well, which is why they're fairly successful.
Yeah. Can I throw it back to El Dorado?
El Dorado. I haven't seen it, but I believe you. So DreamWorks is capable of doing those things. There are clearly talented people at DreamWorks. There are clearly very, very talented artists at DreamWorks. And in a moment here, I want to talk about craftsmanship versus production and versus producers and writers, directors, whatever. Anyway, we'll talk about it in a second. But first, I want to say that based on some conversations I've had with people at DreamWorks, who shall remain unnamed, this was surprising to me. Apparently, DreamWorks, it's a corporate cultural problem. And DreamWorks has gone through a lot of changes in the past like number of years. So there's been a lot of like executive leadership change, et cetera, which can be catastrophic in the process of creation of creative development.
Well, we learned that this movie was in the middle of development and being animated when Universal bought DreamWorks.
Yes,
there's huge changes there.
Yeah, huge shifts in creative development. And creative development is the place, especially with animation, more with animation maybe than other movies, where that is the place where stories either come together and work, or the place where they die. And so creative development needs to be procedurally protected by the leadership and culture of a company. And in Pixar, you see this happening over and over again. They have created a creative culture that is very effective and produces really strong storytelling. And Disney, I think, is hit a little hit or miss, but has hit, I think, especially as they acquired Pixar and then were influenced by some of the executives and leadership there and some of the culture there. We see them hitting more often now as well. DreamWorks, I think, has yet to find that culture. And so I've been told sort of vaguely that they're a little bit celebrity obsessed, which is not the way you creatively develop. Like, you don't build stories around celebrities. You build stories and then you attach the right talent to them. Apparently it is a producer driven framework rather than a director or writer driven framework. So there are, I think, and I don't presume to have any real firsthand knowledge of any of this. This is stuff that I've heard, but I guess what I'm trying to emphasize is that it comes down to a cultural issue. So when we see a story not working, it's not because the writer sucked. It's not because the director sucked. You can't point the finger at the creatives and say, you did a bad job. What you can do is point a finger at the culture and say, something needs to change. Mm. And so for DreamWorks, I think so many of their movies have not worked narratively that something needs to change. And you can continue operating on the philosophy of like, oh, well, we're making money, so who cares? But honestly, I think that ship is left. I think that you don't get to make a lot of money just because you have a big, expensive, beautiful-looking movie. I think that there's enough competition in the water now that like you gotta tell a good story. This movie did not do that well in theaters.
It did not, and I think you also have. Excuse me. You also have Netflix that has somewhat proven that, where you have movies like there was a Chris Pine straight to Netflix like medieval movie that was big and beautiful and gorgeous.
I think it was called The Last Kingdom.
Last Kingdom, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's not a good movie. And
full disclosure, watched that movie.
What'd you think?
Liked some of it a lot.
Oh.
Also wasn't that great.
Also
I mean, overall it was, yeah.
And Netflix recently,
it was underdeveloped.
Yeah. And Netflix recently, like their kind of strategy has been just like push money,
just pump stuff out.
And they've recently been like, they had kind of pulled back the reins, and have stopped that. And I think that there's a bit of, potentially a strategic and cultural kind of shift that's starting to happen at Netflix, because it's not just about making stuff, because there's so much stuff that we can go anywhere and find something that we love. So it's, you know, this is kind of Econ 101, where competition is a good thing.
Yes.
It'll make studios better. At least that's the hope.
If there is so much to choose from, people are naturally going to gravitate toward the best stuff, whatever that means. And that could mean garbage. Like, I mean, you know, reality TV, like the worst kind of reality TV is the most popular because it is so effective at what it does.
Yeah.
You know, you can call it garbage and it is, but it's also really sophisticated garbage.
Yeah.
It is really giving well people exactly garbage. What they want.
Yeah.
And so, it'd be easy to make an argument against people seeking out the best, but I think that they generally do. If given enough competition, you're going to go for the higher quality stuff. So, it is worth it to go for quality over quantity. And the reason that I feel fairly passionately about DreamWorks, wanting DreamWorks to change and to become better, because it clearly has such an incredibly vast stable of deeply talented people.
No question.
And you want those resources to be effectively deployed.
Yeah.
You want those craftspeople who are so talented and so good at their jobs to be able to point their work and have it sort of work all the way up.
Yep.
Instead of just us saying, well, yeah, your animators and your illustrators are amazing, but like, I didn't like this movie. Like, yeah. That's sad. That's not fair. It's not fair to those craftspeople. It's not fair to the writers and directors who were involved and this is an assumption here because I don't know any of them personally, but given enough executive and cultural instability, it's almost impossible for writers and directors to execute good storytelling.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sucks for them too. You know, it sucks for everybody.
Yeah. Well, we learned that the director on this movie changed twice.
Yeah.
And then the executives behind it also changed. So if you ever played the telephone game, right?
Say no more.
You have a line of people. you whisper something into one of their ears, and then they whisper it and whisper it and whisper it. And then inevitably, 100% of the time, at the end of the line, it becomes a completely different sentence.
100% different.
And I feel
gossip
like that's...
Gossip is a game of telephone, and so is creative development.
And I feel like in
this situation.
This movie started as one thing and probably became 15 other things before it landed at what it was.
Yeah.
And so the fact that there are... like emotional things that did land.
Kind of a miracle.
It's kind of a miracle. And props to the animators because they landed because it was so beautiful and the music was so good.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's obvious talent behind it.
The design and the artistry are
I just put a good story in there. I just want story.
Yeah.
It'll make me care so much more.
Amen, brother.
Yeah.
That's couldn't have said it better myself. So I think that's probably mostly all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean
about
that's,
this movie.
Yeah, there's. I wish that there was more positive to say about it. And there are some. I wish there were more themes to talk about, but they just weren't there.
Yeah, that was the problem. There isn't a lot of narrative meat to dive into here.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine to kind of leave this dead horse alone. I would be lying if I said that I'm like a little bit glad that this movie hasn't been a bonkers blockbuster success.
Yeah.
Because I do want I want stuff to be communicated. You know, I want people to feel it in the wallet. You know,
yeah.
To say, oh, you know, if we want huge monster successes in the box office, you've got to treat creative development right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping. I always feel hopeful at, you know, when a movie like this tanks a little bit, that will be communicated.
You know, what movie has done really well at the box office this weekend?
Are you going to say Joker?
I am going to say Joker.
Okay, so here we are. And CJ has seen this movie.
I have.
And Jordan has now seen this movie.
Hey-o!
And
here we are.
I am so excited for that episode.
I am
a little nervous, but I'm so excited.
We generally, so the reason we bring it up is because that's what we're talking about on Friday.
Yes.
And it's going to be our 100th episode. We're going to have a guest on and we're going to have some
Gaston.
Fun. We're going to have a guest on.
Yeah. He's going to eat 2 dozen eggs.
Yeah. we usually don't really talk about movies before we record. We couldn't help ourselves.
We couldn't help ourselves.
We had a little bit of a conversation. We both were like, no, we'll talk about it. Wait, but one more thing. And then we kind of kept talking.
In fairness, CJ said that. And then I just kept talking because I have no respect for the sanctity of this podcast.
So just based on the conversation we had then, the conversation that we will record about Joker is going to be fascinating.
And we have a guest. We're bringing back Mr. Dixon Gaines.
He joined us for our Spider-Man Far From Home episode.
I'm so excited to have him back on the podcast. Yeah, he is so fun.
People requested him. He is quite witty and delightful.
Yeah. If we're going to have a returning guest, I'm so glad it's our first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he'll be joining us for our 100th
episode. And if you didn't hear who the winner of our big trivia challenge was, go back to listen to the Dark Knight episode. It was also an awesome episode. It was a great episode. Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
I was very pleased with how that all turned out.
Yeah.
I like this.
I like this too. We've done 100 episodes. If you didn't like it, then...
We've done 99.
That's true. We've done 99 episodes.
We're about to do... something horrible could happen.
Oh, no. Don't say that.
And I just...
Knock on wood.
Give CJ a creepy stare for like 2 minutes, not saying anything.
Right after you saw Joker.
Something truly terrible could happen, CJ.
I'm so glad that we synced on that.
Everyone is going to wonder.
We just synced up just so well.
If there's more to that than me just being stupid on tape. Anyway.
That was amazing.
I'm looking forward to all kinds of stuff. We should wrap up. We should thank Michael Bonmiller for the incredible music.
Yes, we should.
Also, sorry, Michael Bonmiller. Your music hasn't started yet because I need to put in another plug for Himalaya. I'm looking at the numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking at the numbers and I'm seeing what you've told me.
Yeah.
That like 70% of our audience is still using like Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
Guys.
I think
I don't want to shame anybody. But honestly, like Himalaya is such a better app. And like, you know, it's and like yeah, we push Nerd Critic Premium on Himalaya, and like that's neat. But like honestly,
it's just a better app,
and like you don't need to pay for Himalaya to listen to us on Himalaya. You can listen to us on Himalaya without becoming a premium member, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So it really is just about using a better app and a better platform, and we want your listening experience of Nerd Critic to be as good as possible. So just try it out. That's all.
Yeah, just try it out.
This is not an advertisement, by the way. They are not paying us anything.
Yeah, you just and what's cool about it is I know that you have all of your precious podcasts that you listen on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
There's an import button.
Yeah.
And it literally
snap.
An import button, and you press yes, and bam, it's done.
Yep.
It brings it all over. So.
Yep. There's really no reason to at least try it.
Just try it. Just give it a shot. It's a free app.
Yeah.
It's free to get on there.
Yeah.
All right. Now, thank you, Michael.
Yes. For the great outro music. And remember, everyone, no matter the movie, remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.